everybody. Thank you for coming to listen to me today. My name is Debbie Eisen. I'm a therapist who's trained in 13 different therapies, and I also train therapists in hypnotherapy, past life regression, Reiki, and I'm also an NLP trainer. And also, as another string to my bow, over the last year, I've started doing my PhD, and that is in parapsychology. So I'm getting exposed to all sorts of really interesting information. So it combines really beautifully with the therapeutic work that I do. So what I thought I'd talk to you about today is near-death experiences. And I had a fascination with this as a child. You know, back in the day, there used to be those television programs about strange and unusual experiences. And I used to be one of those kids that was fascinated by those spontaneous human combustion, poltergeists. And I'd seen one about a near-death experience. But then, as you grow up, I sort of forgot about those experiences. And it's not something I've had myself. But then when I started working with clients, a few clients started to tell me about the near-death experiences they've had, and it sparked my interest. I had gentleman who came to work with me, and actually he was going through a really difficult transition in his life. And when I inquired what was going on, he said, "I don't feel like I belong anymore." He said that he had a very successful job in the corporate world, very wealthy, very affluent lifestyle, lots of friends, lived the social life. But what had occurred to him several months prior to coming to see me is he'd had a heart attack. And during that heart attack, he experienced something strange and unusual. He had what we'd call a near-death experience. And as part of that experience, he felt like he was no longer in his body. He felt himself floating up out of his body. He could see the medical professionals trying to resuscitate him. And he felt himself travelling towards a light. And in this light, he was met by his grandmother and also a being he'd never met that he perceived to be an angel. And he had a chat with them, and he was filled with this profound sense of love, this profound sense of well-being. And it was like he knew there was something more to his life than what he'd ever experienced. With that, he felt a jolt back into his body. He was resuscitated and he came round. But what that did was it opened his eyes that there was something more to him, his purpose and his life. And he was struggling to reconcile that because all of a sudden, this corporate role that he'd had was meaningless. It didn't make sense to him. It wasn't important. Actually, this lifestyle that had been going out, drinking, socialising, all these parties, he found actually quite boring. He wanted to have fascinating conversations with people about the meaning of life, about what a soul is, about purpose. And nobody in his social circle could do that. He found that he was struggling to gel with his wife and children because they weren't interested in anything like that. So it was almost a, who am I? What do? Why am I here? And so through our conversations, I then worked with him with a combination of hypnotherapy and other tools and techniques over a period of several months so that he became more settled and he did start to make those life changes that he needed so that he felt more fulfilled within himself. Now, I found this really, really interesting because the experience he described was very similar to when I have past life regression clients. So when I have a client for a past life regression, what happens is I take them into hypnosis, get them nice and relaxed, and I guide their mind to a significant past life for them to explore at this time. They go through, they get all the details of that lifetime, but then we get to the death part. And what tends to happen when they go through that death period is they may feel uncomfortable, they may have that experience, and sometimes as a therapist it can be a little bit strange because sometimes I've seen clients reenact their deaths. Deaths aren't always pleasant, they're not always done in a nice way. But after that, what comes is a sense of calm and a sense of peace. And when people have that past life experience, they often recognise that they're no longer in their bodies and they're observing the body that they've left, perhaps observing their loved ones around them, and then they start to float or drift away from their body. That's followed by perhaps a tunnel of darkness, but then a bright light. and often in that light, they're greeted by loved ones, relatives that have passed away, or beings of light, angels, guides. And at that point, when we've gone through that past life process, we tend to go through a life review. So reviewing that previous lifetime, what lessons were learnt in that lifetime, how it's impacted who they are in this lifetime, what are the relationships and dynamics like? And as I listened to this gentleman, I thought, wow, there's some parallels here. What he was describing in his near-death experience was what hundreds of my clients that have had past life regressions experience when they say that they've left their body in that lifetime and go to this energetic in-between life state. I thought, this is interesting. My interest has been further sparked. So as I said, now I've started university, I'm studying for my PhD, and I've become really good friends with a lady called Emily. And Emily did a podcast with me a few weeks ago. It's worth a listen, Tranquil Awakenings podcast. And Emily, very similar, she worked in the corporate world. She was a designer for big businesses. And she was very, very poorly. And she had a near-death experience where she floated out of her body, but she was filled with this profound sense of love. And when she returned back to her body, once again, her life didn't make sense. So she's gone on this most fantastic journey where she changed her diet, she changed her interactions with people, she gave up her job, and she's gone on this quest for knowledge to find other individuals who have had these near-death experiences. She's found there's so many people. And actually, do you know what? There's an awful lot of research. At the moment, she's studying end-of-life experiences, what people experience as they're transitioning through the death state. And once again, she's finding so many parallels. But this has been found time and time again in the literature. So we refer to them as near-death experiences because we often look at the work of Raymond Moody in the 1960s. But actually, if we look back to ancient times, ancient Greece, ancient Rome, all different cultures from around the world, these near-death experiences have been described. However, we tend to be experiencing more of them nowadays because the way our medical system has advanced, lots of people who have got to a near-death state, either their heart stopped or perhaps the EEGs are showing that the brain's no longer functioning, we have ways to bring people back from the death now. So more people are having these near-death experiences. And they tend to follow a similar pattern. Now, not everybody has a positive near-death experience. There are some exceptions where some people find it traumatic. But in general, most people find it a really positive experience. So since the work of Moody, other researchers have looked at it, people like Grayson. He's done extensive studies over a 30-year period where they have documented people's near-death experiences. And there's so many fascinating stories out there. Now, obviously, a lot of these started off as anecdotal, but what we've done by collecting these through research is finding actually there are patterns. So I'm going to tell you about some of the common things that happen when people have a near-death experience. And actually, some of you in this room may have had a near-death experience yourself or known somebody that's had a near-death experience. Because I think about 5% of the population have had this experience, but possibly more. Because sometimes people don't tell other people about it because it's weird, because it's strange, because it's not something that their friends would understand or not something they've necessarily understood. Now, what I find interesting about near-death experiences is it doesn't seem to matter what cultural background or upbringing you've had as to whether these occur. So these occur whether you're an atheist, whether you're a Christian, whether you're a Hindu, a Buddhist, whatever religion or none that you follow, people have these experiences. But they tend to interpret them based on their religion and upbringing. So what tends to happen in these experiences is when people are very poorly. When actually something's happened, we used to look in sort of medical science about when the heart stopped, but now often we look at EEGs as to when the brain's no longer really working as it should, when somebody's classed as brain dead. So often what happens in these situations is that there are medical professionals around now to corroborate what's actually happened, what this person claims. So the first step is often people find themselves levitating or coming out of their body. They perhaps see themselves being operated on or lying there. They notice the people around them and their senses become very aware. they'll often see and hear things. Things that you wouldn't expect to happen if somebody was purely passing away. We can look at the brain, but often those things start to deteriorate. But with people with near-death experiences, they get a lot of clarity. As they then leave their body, they feel almost like they're more real than this reality. It's like this is an illusion. It feels more real than we are now. So almost if you think about a dreamlike state, when you have a dream, you feel less real than you are in this physical reality. They feel even more real than that, that there's something more. Initially, it can be having that sense of disorientation, what's going on? And then that awareness of, oh my gosh, I'm dead. My body's dead. But I'm not in my body, I'm alive, I'm observing my body. So if I'm observing my body, who am I? What am I? I'm something more. And this is something that is debated in science and different literature throughout time. What are we? Are we purely physical brain matter? And that's something, for example, that Grayson, he was a medical doctor, he would have thought about the very material 3D world when he was looking at the brain. But actually, if we're continuing to exist and have a presence beyond that, what are we? What is the mind? Is the mind something that exists beyond our physical brain? Is it something that is transmitted through the brain? What is consciousness? Exactly. What is consciousness? There's all these debates that are going on, but to a lot of us in here, like you say, it's spirit. It's we are a soul or an energy. And often people have that awareness when they are experiencing this near-death experience. Some individuals will stop there and observe what's going on, but then others will often then find that tunnel appears. Often the darkness, but then transitioning to a bright light. And often at those times, they are greeted by loved ones. So there might be people that have passed away that they've known, but sometimes even people that they had no awareness of or knowledge of. And I'm going to share some stories with you about that shortly. Other times it might be who they perceive to be Jesus or God or a guide or an angel. And that is based on people comparing it to what they understand in their life. So often people who have these near-death experiences will say, do you know what? I can't comprehend this. I can't put it into words. It was something beyond words. But when obviously researchers then start to ask, well, what was it like? They then have to put it into words. So they may make comparisons to religious texts or beliefs that they've had. So perhaps it felt like I was in heaven and I saw the pearly gates, but not literally, but that's the closest I can describe it to. So they have this really amazing experience. Quite often, a part of that is a life review, where memories of key significant events of things that have happened during life flash before them. Now that may be really positive experiences. It may be things where perhaps they haven't made the right choices or the best choices, and they're being shown that to highlight that there's a different way. Then obviously what happens is they get brought back. Something happens to allow them to come back into their physical body. But often it leaves people very changed. Because in that experience, it's often accompanied by really positive feelings of joy, peace, bliss, contentment, being whole, being complete and fulfilled. So it allows individuals to recognise that they are more than all the stuff that they've been hanging on to in life. And that can be really liberating for people. And a common factor we often find with near-death experiences is many times, not always, many times people become more spiritual. Now that may be more religious. If they have got a religious background, they may become more religious, but often we find it goes the opposite way. So people who have been brought up in very religious backgrounds may have an awareness of a God or something higher, but they will often get rid of the teachings that they've been brought up with in childhood, and they just feel a sense of oneness. They tend to feel more connected to nature, the world around them, everyone and everything. And it's a greater sense of purpose. I'm here for a reason. I've been brought back for a reason. I chose not to go. And there's been studies done because some individuals thought, well, do you know what? If people are having these near-death experiences, and what was also happening is it tended to take away people's fear of death. They were no longer frightened of dying. So they thought, if people are no longer frightened of dying, maybe it makes them more reckless in life. Or maybe they're more likely to commit suicide because if things get difficult, they think, actually, do you know what? I can check out. But actually, we found out with research, the opposite tends to occur. People who have those near-death experiences often have a newfound appreciation for life. Life may still be challenging, but they know they're here for some sort of reason. They feel empowered. There's a sense of belonging and connection. So these are life-changing experiences for people. Now, when we look at different scientific explanations, there are some explanations that have been put forwards. So one of them is that what's happening is the brain is getting deprived of oxygen. And because of that, these unusual experiences start to occur. However, when studies have taken place, they've actually found often those people who are in that near-death experience actually had better levels of oxygen in their brain than individuals who didn't have that experience. So that doesn't quite add up. Researchers have tried to replicate the near-death experience using different types of narcotics, different types of drugs. So, for example, small doses of ketamine have been given to individuals to induce that out-of-body experience. But what's being found when that's happened is people often feel things are very distorted. So it might feel that their limbs are stretched or shrunk, or it can be a very trippy, strange experience. Whereas individuals who have a near-death experience are recognising they're no longer in their physical body, but they feel perfectly whole and complete, and they have extreme clarity. They have extreme awareness. We also look at the idea of DMT in the brain, but once again, that hypothesis hasn't been fully explored. And ultimately, as we look at all of this, we recognise, do you know what? We don't really know a lot about the human brain. We're still learning a lot about the human brain, what different parts of it does, different interactions between the different parts, different hormones, different chemicals. And so far, there's not been a really good scientific explanation of this is what is happening. There's different theories. Now, it could be a combination of different things that are going on. However, for those individuals, what seems to be key and significant is that this is life-altering in a positive way. Now, what I really love are some of the stories that you can read and listen to about these near-death experiences. And there was a study done on 31 individuals who were blind that had near-death experiences. So they were either blind from birth or had been blind for a number of years, so they couldn't physically see. And 80% of them, when they had a near-death experience, were able to see things that were going on in the room around them. So there was one example of a lady, an elderly lady, who had been blind for many years. And as she had her near-death experience, she'd risen out of her body and she'd gone and stood near the window in the operating theatre. And as she watched, at one point, one of the doctors, as they leant over, a pen fell out of their pocket. And the pen rolled over towards the window. And as they were trying to resuscitate her, that doctor gets up, moves, picks his pen up without saying a word and places it back in his pocket. When she comes out of that experience, she explains that even though she's been blind for a lot of years, she saw that. Now, nobody spoke of it. She must have witnessed it in some way. Fascinating. There's another story where often it's mundane things that are noticed, where one individual noticed one of the nurse's shoes and saw that the nurse had two different sets of shoelaces on her shoes. They didn't match. Once again, why would somebody notice that? But it's because they were looking down and they were aware. Now, when researchers started to hear about this, they thought, I know what we'll do. We're going to see how this works. So they would start to hide things in operating theatres and rooms, perhaps high up on a shelf. They would put some sort of picture to see whether or not those people having near-death experiences saw that. Nobody reported it. But when they spoke to people who'd had near-death experiences, they tended to get the same response where they were laughed at. And they were like, why on earth, when we're having an out-of-body experience, when we're leaving our body, and would we be looking round for some sort of random picture or something and thinking, not only have I got to notice that, but I've got to remember that. Doesn't make sense. And likewise, you couldn't tell those people perhaps before they were going to have an operation. Do you know what? If you just happen to die on the operating table, there's going to be something hidden around that room and you need to pay attention for what it is. That would be creating bias and priming the people. So they found out that that didn't really work. But there's all these fascinating stories. There's one story where an individual rose out of their body and they were floating through the hospital. And they said that when they got to the fifth floor of the hospital, on a ledge on the outside of the hospital, they saw a trainer, this old shoe. Now, that was something they reported to the researcher, and the researcher, out of curiosity, thought, oh, do you know what? I'm going to have to go and see if I can find this. And sure enough, on the fifth floor, when they went exploring the outside of the building, there was this trainer. It couldn't be seen from outside the building or from any windows, and it had probably been there for a good decade or so, probably from the last time there was construction work that had taken place on the building. So all these amazing things. So often there's these sightings and also hearing things. Lots of individuals will describe strange things that the doctors did. So one example was one of the doctors stood there panicking and flapping his arms. Once again, that patient had noticed that and reported back. Also, when individuals talk about these experiences, often, as we say, they meet loved ones or people in spirit, and they're often filled with that profound sense of love. What's really interesting, there's a number of those in the literature where the people didn't know that that person had passed away. It may have been a friend or a family member, but at the time they had no awareness that that person had died. So how could that person be in spirit talking to them? It shows that perhaps we can verify this. There's one really interesting story that Grayson talks about where he interviewed a gentleman who wasn't feeling very well. He'd gone up to have a shower and he collapsed. His wife went to help him and she called for the paramedics and he started having seizures. He became very poorly. They transferred him to hospital and in the end they gave him the drugs that would put him in a medically induced coma. However, he was already in a coma by the time they gave him those drugs. Something was going on with his body. As they monitored him, what they noticed as they were looking at his brain, they said there's no point even doing an EEG. His brain is so filled with fluid, it's like mush. They found out that actually he had a specific bacteria, a very rare bacteria, that if people get it, 99% of those people that have that bacteria will die. The 1% that do come round tend to be severely incapacitated. They can no longer see, they can no longer hear, they can no longer walk, they have brain damage. So his wife was told, look, prepare for the worst. He's probably going to die, but if he recovers, he's probably going to be in a vegetative state or not in a very good way. So he was gone for a good few days, took several weeks to recover, but during that time he had a near-death experience. And in this near-death experience, he was greeted by this beautiful lady that gave him this profound sense of love and healing and peace and gave him the guidance and messages he needed, and he came back. He made a full recovery. It astounded medical professionals because he had no brain damage, he had no issues. Now, what was really interesting about this individual is he had been adopted at birth. He'd had parents who were at college at the time, they didn't feel they could support a child, so they gave him up for adoption. They went on to get married and they had several more children. Now, what he had decided to do at one point is he decided to look for his birth parents. So he'd contacted the agency and they had found his birth parents and he got in contact with them and he met his siblings and they had an okay relationship. And one time he went round to their house after this experience had happened and he was looking through some family photos. And in one of those photos, he looked and he was like, that's the woman I saw when I was in my near-death experience. And what he was then told was actually that was your sister. You had another sister who passed away in a car accident, and that was her. He could not have known that information. So this is absolutely fascinating. What's going on? And we'll all have our own ideas, our own awareness of what that might be. But I find it really interesting that as we read about these experiences and hear about them, they actually fit so well with things like past life regression, other spiritual experiences individuals have. People that meditate often can often get into that state where they become awareness, where they're filled and surrounded by light, where they interact with beings and receive information. So there's something fascinating in this, and I absolutely love finding out more. So once I've done my PhD in spirit release therapy, I think I'd like to research this more. What I also found was interesting is I did the spirit release work, once again, there were parallels. So one of my niches therapeutically is spirit release therapy. And the easiest way to describe that is therapeutic exorcism. done in a really kind, compassionate way. That is not something I ever wanted to do as a therapist. It's not something I went looking for. It's something that presented in the therapy room to me. And the first time it happened, I really didn't like it. It scared me. When an individual went from being themselves to speaking, a female, to speaking in a very deep man's voice, swearing at me profusely and being quite unpleasant, I didn't like that. But this started to happen more often, where individuals would sometimes claim that the origins of their issue was not because of them, it was something external. Somebody that had passed away that had attached to them and got stuck, or something else. So I started working with this, thinking, well, do you know what? It doesn't matter to me what my belief systems are. It's what the client presents with is what I work with, because that's how you're going to help people. And it was very similar to what we see sort of in mediumship. If you see mediums that often will take on spirit, sort of that overshadowing where perhaps their voice will change or their facial expressions as a spirit comes through. I was seeing very similar to that with some of my clients, a minority of my clients, but this was happening. And what started to occur as I spoke with these alleged entities was I'd find out about their lives, just in the same way as I would past life regression. So I'd find out, why did they die? What happened to them? Why didn't they go to the light? Why are they with the person? But the same process was relevant again. So what I started to find was it was all about helping that individual. So it was often getting in a bit of a different order of getting them to have a bit of a life review, chatting to me of, well, what happened in your life? What's made you be stuck here? And how can we heal that with you? Then, as they felt better, this light would appear. Once again, a tunnel, a light. Often for those alleged entities, what would come through is a loved one. It might be their grandmother, their mother. It might be a friend that came through. Other times it was an angelic being or a guide. Once again, this same experience that's described with near-death experiences, with past life experiences, occurring time and time again. Now that's fascinating. And what I'll do is I'll finish just with one story about one of those alleged entities that came through, and then I will open up to anyone that wants to say anything. So quite early on when I was experiencing that, one entity came through who named himself as Brian. He had a very strong Southern American accent, and he was swearing a lot at me, and he was Nazi saluting and seemed to like Hitler. And he went on a tirade about how he hated all different groups of people, women, black people, Jews. And it was strange. I was like, oh, I don't know what to do with this. I was brand new to it. And so I listened for a while, and this alleged entity was coming through a female. A client that I sat there, and I just said eventually, I was like, actually, I'm kind of fed up with hearing you ranting and saying horrible things about people. Can I just ask, what's going on? I was like, what are you doing? He's like, what do you mean? I said, well, you're in a female body. He's like, what do you mean I'm in a female body? Swear at me. I was like, no, seriously, look down. You're in a female body. He said, oh, what's going on? I was like, right, I need you to remember what happened in your life. And he went on to describe how he'd gone to this far right rally somewhere. I was like, well, then what happened to you? He says, I've got trampled by a horse. There was lots of swearing and expletives. He'd got trampled by a horse and this horse had killed him. I was like, right, okay, so now we've established that. Let's go back to this question. You're in a female body right now. You've been telling me how you don't like females. If this female body's not you, what are you? He went, what am I? What am I? Oh, what am I? What am I? I'm eyes. Oh, I'm not even eyes. What am I? And I was like, you're a soul, Brian. He went, oh. And I said, right, look at me. And I had two colleagues in the room. Look at them. What do you notice? He's like, you're all souls. You're all energy. I'm a soul. I'm energy. He said, oh my God, what have I done? Put his hands face and sobbed. He said, I've been horrible to all these people. I've been unkind to all these people. I've had all these prejudices. But actually underneath it all, we're all the same. We're all a soul, we're all a spirit, we're all energy. And I'm sorry for what I've done. And so after about 20 minutes of sobbing, I was like, would you think actually maybe now it's time to go? So he said he was ready to go into the light. And at that moment, he noticed the light appear. And he said his mama had come for him. And there was initial excitement that mama had come for him. But then he's like, oh, she's telling me off. I was like, well, what's she saying? He's like, she's telling me off because I've been horrible to everybody. I was like, well, is that because she's really cross at you? Or is that just because she loves you and wants something better for you? And it's like, because she loves me and wants something better. So once again, apologised and off who went. So I don't have any answers for any of these experiences. I'm just aware of them in the therapy room, whether it's a past life regression, whether it's a spirit release session, whether it's an individual sharing their past life experiences or their near-death experiences, even out-of-body experiences, where often people experience those where they zip and astral travel to places or they feel themselves coming out of their body. There are all these parallels and overlaps. So something's happening. I don't know what it is, but it's absolutely amazing. So thank you ever so much for listening to me. I'm going to hand it over now. Has anybody got either any questions or has anybody had a near-death experience they'd like to share? I'll open it up to you guys.
Mesmerised us.
I suppose I would say in 2021 I had a cardiac arrest at home.
Okay.
And I was out for quite a while and the ambulance was at home 30 minutes. They were in my press on my chest and doing whatever they're doing with the oxygen, and then 2 hours in the ambulance outside, another ambulance turned up and a doctor turned up. My ribcage got smashed to bits. I didn't see any of this. I don't know whether I died or not, but now I'm a different person. I'm in the physical body, but I go around talking to my wife and say, I'm dead version two, because I feel like a different person. I'm clearer, and I'm just
I'm
calmer. I was in 2020 and 2021, I was so angry with the world that this happened to me, and it's changed me into a version two.
Amazing. Oh, thank you for sharing that with us.
No, I'm just 3 months in hospital, but does that to you?
Yes.
And three and a half weeks in a coma as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you did well to not come out with any lasting
Well, my brain, I've got a bit of an hypoxic brain injury, but apart from that, my heart's probably, anyway.
Amazing.
Here I am.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Has anyone got anything else they'd like to share?
I had a near-death experience about 34 years ago. I was in a serious car accident. And I don't actually recall the actual crash, but all my family, it was like a shutter.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to be put out of the car, but I remember like looking down. And it wasn't a tunnel or anything, but there was just this light, and somebody was going, I don't know who it was going like that to me. And I was like, no, I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
But all I can remember is just like that. But I can't remember seeing like anybody I recognised. But it wasn't a tunnel, it was just a light. And I do remember like looking down at myself. And then that's all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was worst experience of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But it has changed the way I deal with things now.
Amazing.
And sometimes I thought, was it a near-death experience that, or did I dream it or what? But I can still close my eyes and I can see it now.
Amazing.
What happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just feel like I was floating.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they cut me out of the car, all I remember was the fireman said, whatever you do, don't move. And I thought, well, I'm here, like looking down on myself. But it's like the car thing was so close to my face and they had to do the...
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, I said, I'm getting out in a minute. Just wait, I'm getting out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really strange feeling.
Amazing, how fascinating.
Yeah, but it was like that shutter mm-hmm. of all my family.
Yeah.
Did you recognise the person that was calling?
No, that's just it. I know it was just. I know it was a woman, and she was just basically going like that. Mm-hmm. Oh no!
It's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, obviously, in that situation, to be aware that you weren't in your body as they were doing that, and lots of people describe when they're in that situation when they come out of their body, all of a sudden they don't feel any pain or any trauma in their body. They just feel perfectly fine. They're well. They're just noticing what's happening to them.
Yeah, I didn't feel any pain whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel anything from the neck down.
Yeah.
For quite a long time.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, what an... transformative experience.
Not something I ever want to experience again.
No, and I think that's fair enough, isn't it?
But yeah, it's strange. Like, I understood where you were coming from when you were saying it, but yeah, it must have been near death.
Absolutely. Mm. And it normally occurs, obviously, when people are close to death in one way or another. And like I said, occasionally people don't have a positive experience of this. Often it's when they go into that first stage where they perhaps are aware of being in darkness and they don't progress from that. And all of a sudden that can feel quite frightening to just be in the dark, and that can feel like a panic state. And I have had one or two individuals that I've spoken to that had that near-death experience, but actually when they had their life review, not very pleasant things that happened in their life flash forward and that scared them. But I think almost that happened to make them realise, right, get back into your body, there's a different way forwards now. Mm-hmm. So I tend to think the more I experience these things, we get given what we need. It's not always what we want, but often things can have a learning or growth opportunity in them if we're willing to take on board that learning and growth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've worked with a lot of end-of-life elderly people over the years, and the difference that you see at their end-of-life, different situations, different ways that things that happen. You have some that have you think that their body won't move, but they've actually reached out and pointed. Mm. You know, they've said a name. They've suddenly brightened up. You know, they're smiling and things like that. And to see all those different reactions sort of correlates with what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Totally, you know.
And I remember that with my friend Karen when I was working with her at the hospice. I talk about her often in these talks because I was working with her the last couple of weeks of her life. And actually in those final few days, she started to notice family members coming in and they were waiting to take her off. Yeah. And that was actually a really beautiful experience to witness, but also the peace that it gave her and that sense of well-being was amazing. It's fascinating.
I'm certainly not afraid of dying now.
Well, and that's the thing, most people lose that fear of dying.
That's funny. I've got no fear of dying.
Except the process you go through. It
sometimes it's the process that's
the worrying thing.
Yeah.
When I was working, because I was in nursing, and one of my ladies was dying, and she said, "Oh, what a beautiful garden."
Oh.
Just before she went.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it's amazing. So also, some people, when they're very close, will hear beautiful music as well, and or see lovely imagery, and I think, oh, how nice is that? Yeah. Amazing. Oh, well, thank you ever so much for coming and listening to me. And obviously, I'll hang around for a few minutes if anyone wants to come and share anything in private. And if not, I'll be down at my stall or wandering somewhere around because I'm terrible for going for a wander and chatting to everybody on the floor somewhere, just not being stood at my stall. I do try, but everybody's so interesting. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.